Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 27th. I'm Ray Graff. All week long, the clamor has been growing. People have been clamoring for the gardening show. When is the gardening show? Well, the gardening show is now. Bob Graves is here of Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They're all here to answer your gardening questions. So if you have one, call us, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Always a popular show. Best to call now. And you can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Let the clamoring end. The gardening show is here. Bob, Fred, Greg are here, and we'll start right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show, and joining us, those familiar, friendly voices, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery. We welcome your calls now at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us if you want, and it's at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Fred, Bob, Greg, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back.
Good Thank to be honest. Back. It's this finally is, warmed up.
It does. It feels like summer.
And it's not raining.
It's not today.
We had Jason Goff, meteorologist, on a couple of days ago, and he remarked, and I didn't even think about this, we had a real spring, and almost as the calendar turned to summer, exactly. It was like almost a switch was thrown, and it
I noticed
felt like
that
summer.
Myself. I but actually said the same thing. It was almost like literally 21st, and boom, summer was there, and the next day followed like suit.
I was watching the weather last weekend. It was more like Phoenix than anything else.
Yeah.
Low humidity, high temperature, wind.
Wow.
Don't worry. We'll get some rain again soon.
Yeah.
It's looking pretty good, though. I think we have a good 7 or 8 days of mostly sun.
Mostly sun.
Nothing serious before after the 4th of July, and that's good. We're a little lacking in sun still, so it's good to
you think?
Get it going.
Well, that's great, and we have a lot of calls here, so if you guys are ready, we'll get to the phones.
Let's do it.
All right, 800-348-2551 is the number. Jesse and Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for... I have two Montmorency cherry trees, and they've got great crops of cherries on them, ripening nicely. And it seems like this time of year, as the cherries ripen, they download that little spots like they have some kind of fungal thing going on. And I'm just wondering if that's something that's normal as the cherries are ripening, or if this is something to be concerned about.
Okay, we missed a little of that. I assume you're on a cell phone. The subject heading in our computer screen says the cherry trees are dropping a lot of leaves. Is that true?
Yeah. So the leaves are yellowing and dropping as the fruit ripens, and this happens every year. So I'm not sure if that's something to be concerned about or if it's normal.
All right.
I mean, the first thing is it's normal. It's happening every year, so that is sort of the definition of normal. Yellow leaves, are usually not a bad thing, especially if they're the inner ones. The outer ones are green. So the tree put out a lot of leaves. Lots of rain was really, was available, so the tree could put out tons of leaves. We're finally getting to this warm weather of summer, and it doesn't need all of those leaves. It's also putting some energy into that fruit, obviously, so it will start to drop some. And this is not just cherry trees. This will be a lot of trees in the next couple
particularly
of weeks.
Particularly if the leaves are what we call a clean yellow, if they're just turning yellow and there's not spots on it, no brown spots or red spots. If you start having spots on it, that's usually a fungal issue, which is common on fruit trees, but again, not necessarily a disaster either.
They do have spots on them.
The leaves that are falling are... all the ones that are falling have spots?
Yeah, they do. And they typically do this time of year, it seems like.
Yep. So trees will do what they call a summer drop or shed of some of the interior leaves, like Greg had mentioned. But spots on them is not part of the normal. That's not part of the normal cycle. So it sounds like you may have kind of a combination thing of things going on. And the fungal issues, which this year is very prolific. I don't know if you're noticing it more this year than maybe, the last 2 years, I guess, were kind of wet.
Yeah, last year was too.
Yeah, so the last few years have been maybe more of that. But in the past, if you can think back, was it maybe less spots on those leaves? Or if so, it should not be detrimental. It should be more of a foliar disease, and it shouldn't probably affect too much of the fruit production.
Usually worse on apples.
Yes, it seems that seems to be the case. You know, it has been the last couple of years I've noticed it in particular, and it doesn't, you know, the tree bounces back. Everything seems fine. Yep. I was just wondering if that's typical.
So one way that you can sort of reduce the amount of infection, because what happens is a lot of these leaf diseases, the spores on those little spots, which they are fungal, sort of break down on the ground. A lot of apples trees do this too, a lot of trees this year in particular, all kinds of species. But when they break down on the ground, those spores stay there for next year.
Ah.
So if you rake those leaves up that have the spots and don't compost them, but sort of unfortunately just throw those away, or if you have a burn pile, burn them. And that could, although it's not going to be a cure, it would reduce the amount of the infection for next year. Okay. So you'll just get less of it.
You could put them in the bottom of the compost.
I suppose you could.
Well, thank you for the call, Jesse. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Nancy in Galway. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I think you may have already answered my question. I have a crabapple tree that is about 18 years old now that last year and now lost leaves in stunning quantities. They just kind of turn brown and drop.
Yeah. And you notice it from like midsummer to the end of summer, and as the end of summer, it's kind of getting worse. Is that sort of the pattern? Well, you'll want to see.
Much.
Yeah. So a few questions for you. Obviously, we know we got a lot of leaves falling. The top of the tree, the very top of the tree. Would you say that the amount of foliage on the top is kind of about the same as it is throughout the tree? So uniform. Yeah. In other words, uniform foliage, but we're dropping it from all over the place. Okay, so that clearly sounds like fungal, not like an insect borer or anything like that. And the same thing for the last caller. If you want to try to reduce the amount of next year's inoculum, rake those up. Be diligent. If you have a mower that can bag them, that would be good. But using a mulching type mower, which is great for your lawn, is not going to be the best for around these apple trees if you want to get rid of the inoculum.
Now,
so those get raked up.
You can, for these problems, use a fungicide if you wish to spray. There are some organic fungicides that aren't half bad, some sulfur. There's a couple other ones that there are also chemical forms. It's not essential to come back next year and look fine.
Yep, and that's why a lot of times we don't say right out spray, because on some trees, you know, one fungal pathogen can destroy the plant. But in trees like these apples and these cherries, they almost are never life-threatening. So if you really want to aesthetically make them look good, then you would move towards, you know, sort of control.
You've had a similar tree incident.
In fact, with our crab apple tree, as a matter of fact.
And so it can happen with a lot of crab apples, especially crab apples that are, you know, 30-plus years old.
This is an oldie.
The older varieties.
It has to do with the selection. So the older varieties did it, and so then they came up with some newer varieties that are less likely to do it.
That's really the answer. If you don't want to spray it and you don't like it, you take that one out and put one of the new varieties in, because some of the newer ones don't get it at all.
Yeah, very, very little. A lot of the new ones are all what we call resistant to those.
At this point,
anyway. Yeah, exactly. but a good news is that it's not going to be a life-threatening disease, and you know those kind of diseases we can handle.
You know, I do everything wrong. As you guys know, I do everything wrong. I mulch. When I mow the lawn.
Well, that's actually good. Mulching.
Apparently, it is.
But if you have those spots and you're trying to reduce the amount of inoculum, you wouldn't want to. You would want to rake it up first, and then use your mulching mower.
He's not going to.
That sounds like a lot more work.
He's not going to do that.
It's not going to kill your tree.
I know.
So you're okay.
I kind of like the spots, actually. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
They're cool.
I've got an ash tree, probably about 75 years old, and this year. Didn't get leaves on the east and west side of the canopy. The north side seems to be in full bloom.
All right. Well, you know, there's two main things that have been sort of happening with ash, and for a while we've been sort of labeling this as ash decline, but really the main one was a disease, or actually technically a phytoplasm called ash yellows, and this was before the ash borer was even on the news. So ash yellows has been doing an unfortunately declining a lot of these large ash trees, and even middle size and even small ones, for years. Then we have the ash borer that came in, and the two sort of have two different types of symptoms. And you may have both, but the easy way to decide is that if you have ash yellows, I'll start with them first, you'll have what we call internodal, sparse internodes between all the branches. So your branches will just have foliage at the very ends of the branches. And you would have noticed this over the last few years, because it happens before they actually start to really decline and die. So you'll notice just branches that look, you know, kind of healthy, but the only place where there's growth is at the very, very end.
Like little tufts.
Little tufts of foliage. And then, of course, you'll start to lose branches, And then, of course, eventually you lose the tree. If it's an ash borer, it's going to be a top-down decline. Clear, you have a healthy tree, and then the next time you look at it, you start to see loss of vigor right at the top. The internodal spacing between your branches, in other words, where the foliage is going to be more or less normal-looking, but it'll be a top-down decline. So can you tell me, of those two options, which one you sort of have noticed on your tree? And if so, we could tell you the answer pretty easily.
Well, it's probably the first one with the ash borer when I see holes in the trunk or something.
Usually. Well, you know, at the advanced stages, you would see all those holes. Those holes are all exit holes. Yeah. So that means that already, if you see holes, it would have finished its life cycle. But the fact that you say you see some branches on one side and the other, and you have live branches near the top, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it does sound more like...
North, the tree is this full plume. The east and the west sides, they're pretty much bare.
Yeah. So it does sound like probably more like ash yellows.
And the answer is the same.
It's about the same,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Basically, it doesn't matter.
Cut it down.
Take it down.
It's done.
Yeah,
it's
neither
done.
One of those are, there's no cure for either one of those. So it does sound, unfortunately, like that's
a huge number
of
ash in this part of the world, and they're all going to die.
Oh, boy, that's a shame. All right, that's depressing time to take a break, but let's do it. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. The Gardening Show, always uplifting. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, The Gardening Show. You've been clamoring for this one. Here we go. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward are here to answer your gardening questions. The weather's nice out there. It feels like summer. So let's talk gardening. And let's go to Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello.
How can we help?
Can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Yeah.
Okay, hi. And thank you all for handling my call. I was brave enough to put in a vegetable garden this year, pretty significant, all the food I like. So do the squirrels.
Oh, yeah.
I put up a small fence, a galvanized garden fence on some of it. And even though it's not closed at top, it does seem to be doing the trick. Can I trust it?
No.
No, squirrels.
They're going to go right over it.
You betcha.
They're pretty smart if they think there's something in there.
There's just not enough in there yet, but they're going to get it as soon as it's
Can't you put something on the top?
Yeah, you could.
What are they bothering? What do you have in there that they're bothering
now?
Oh,
they have eaten just about everything except for any of the squash family. They've eaten basil, beans, peas, parsley, cucumber.
I don't think it's squirrels. I think you have rabbits or woodchucks.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, chucks will really
possibly
do that.
A ground squirrel?
Well, it sounds probably more like
I know we have a ground squirrel.
I'm thinking more towards like woodchuck or rabbit.
Yeah, the woodchuck. I'm sorry, that's what I mean. The woodchuck.
He would definitely find those crops that you just mentioned quite tasty.
They make a little low electric fence that you can use to put around there that are solar powered. Just one, you know, if you got kids around, that doesn't work.
No, but, I mean, how high is the voltage?
It depends, it doesn't hurt. See, if you have kids around,
I could put it around my fridge. Might save some
money. I was
going
to say, we'll talk off air.
You can also use one of those pepper repellents. You can spray pepper on some of your food products.
Yeah, I tried the pepper spray. I actually observed the squirrels. That's why I thought it might be the squirrels. I observed the squirrels actually sucking the juice out of the sunflowers.
Sunflowers are, that's candy.
That's different because they like those seeds a real lot.
Yeah.
Yep, and they typically those veggies, they're not the ones that are usually browsing, but you know that low fence should probably... work if it is the...
The other thing I was going to recommend for your vet, not so much for the sunflowers, I don't think it'll work because they get too tall, but for those lower crops, maybe it's your beets or parsley, that it's a stuff called a floating row cover. It's that white, the original brand name was Rime, but it's, I don't know what it's called anymore. And it's made to keep out insects, to keep... protect from frost a little bit.
Huh.
And it works really well as a barrier. You would just lay it over the plants. Usually you bury the end or hold it down with rocks. And you know, it definitely is good at sort of distracting the animals. They don't know what's in there. They won't usually chew a hole through it.
The sun can still get through?
Yeah, and water gets through.
Really?
Air gets through.
We must discuss this. This is great.
Yep.
Cool.
You may also...
what's that product called?
If you go to any garden center and ask for a Rime or floating row cover.
It's just a white
fiber. Floating row cover. Okay.
Yep. And then, you know, another tip, if you're not sure what it is that's actually going after your crops, I say this one and we use it a lot ourselves, is these inexpensive trail cams. They're motion detected. You set them up near the crop, and whoever's going to get it is going to, you know, get a nice little picture taken. And then you're going to know there's going to be no guessing. And it's kind of neat, too. It's kind of fun to see what you might find.
All right, Joan. Right. Hey, good luck. And, you know, report back in a month or two and let us know how you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you all.
You know, it seems to me that as we approach the apocalypse, the animals have no fear. In my neighborhood, there are so many rabbits, and they...
There are more little furry creatures out there.
They don't care.
I talked about that before.
They
don't care. Especially this last few years.
People walk around and they're like, "Hey, how you doing?" Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. Have I mentioned the pair of gray fox we have in our neighborhood?
No.
Everybody needs a pair of those.
That'll clear a lot of the issues.
That'll take care of a lot of the other ones.
At least a dozen chipmunks and several squirrels. And now it's a little hard to find a chipmunk.
I'll be darned.
I hear coyotes behind my house every night.
Wow.
And I still got too many little furry creatures.
Well, you know, and the deer now.
Oh, my
gosh. So many deer. And they literally do not care.
They don't care.
I was standing outside.
They're pretty bold.
5 feet away. How you doing? I'm here now. I'm a human.
Yep.
Looking at me, doesn't care.
Yep. Dog barks at them, they don't care.
No, well, the thing is, they've adapted. And, you know, it's not the same reaction from a deer. Like, if you see a deer out in the middle of the arboretum, you almost never see one.
People say
it's
we're
gone.
Taking over their habitat, but I think they're taking over our habitat.
But in a city, they've adapted or they've lost out. And in these cases, they've adapted.
Right. Well,
for deer, you can use all these repellents.
They're egg-based,
and it's very effective. Even if you have 12 deer in your yard, the repellents
during the summer work quite nicely. And, you know, the chickens next door eat the ticks. So
that's
works out really well.
Chickens are great for ticks.
Yeah, the chickens are a little annoying.
Yep, the possum's the number one tick-eating machine.
Is that right?
Number one.
I guess we've probably talked enough. Let's take a call. Sarah and Niska. Sarah, you're on.
Hi. Happy summer, gentlemen. Thank you for taking the call.
Happy summer.
I have my favorite flower and bush is the hydrangea. I know that it's okay to let the new growth of the following year grow over and taller than the old growth, but then it becomes pretty not pretty to look at.
Yeah.
When do you cut the old wood and make the bush thrive? And I also have a bush that have the snowball hydrangea.
Uh-huh.
And does that come every other year? Because last year I didn't have one bloom on it. And this year I don't know if I'm going to get another bloom. The bush is really full, but I don't know about blooms.
So the first hydrangea you were talking about is the one that blooms in August. It gets big woody plant.
So they have the big snowball, like the big white snowball.
Yeah, they're usually sort of conical more than round, but they don't really show.
Mine are pretty minor.
Doesn't sound like.
Okay, that. Go ahead.
Well, there's basically three kinds for the most part. There's a few others, but we'll stick with the three kinds. And the ones that get the largest, they're often 7 or 8 feet or more if you haven't pruned them in a long time. And bloom usually starting around the 1st of August are the panicle hydrangeas. And those can have some wood in them, but usually they just grow out and you don't notice it. The reason to prune them is either to keep them smaller or to make the flowers bigger, to have heavier growth so the flowers get larger so that if you're going to cut them and dry them, you have a better crop.
And they could actually look more tree-like, small tree-like types on the old ones.
Right. I have a couple of those, but my other ones are more the hydrangea bush.
So
and, you know, they get woody, too. I mean, the stems get woody the following year.
And they're,
as well.
They're white flowers and they're round?
I have white, I have pink, and I do now have a blue one.
Okay. So So now we need to sort of determine which one that is. So the blue one can come pink and white. And you do need to leave the wood intact on the blue ones and possibly the pink one as well if they're the same. You leave the wood intact, and when you see new growth coming and they're starting to leaf out, so it's maybe the middle end of May, you could go in there and take any of the dead stems out.
Okay, so when I see new blooms, then I go in and I can remove the old wood.
Usually wait till then. Yep.
Yeah, when you know what's dead, take it out.
Yep.
See, that's it. Because on what I think is dead, the new shoot will come up above that. And
yeah,
then it's
so,
like, did I just kill? Yeah.
That's why it's important to let it sort of leaf out, and then you're going to know where you're at.
Okay.
You could also scrape the bark a little bit to see what's green or not. But if you let them just sort of grow, then you're going to see what's alive and what's not. Each hydrangea has its own little set of criteria for pruning. And there is a really good website it's put out there. It's hydrangeas.com.
Of course.
It's hydrangea.com.
Yep. And it's a good one because it has it doesn't really talk about anything else. It's just free.
Really? It doesn't talk about anything else?
Imagine that with that kind
even
of a
website. Even some of the resources
that kind of a website address.
Would disagree on what to do with hydrangeas. Yep. You get a lot of different advice with hydrangeas.
But if we know the variety, we can be very specific.
All right.
Exactly.
Yeah. But wait until it leaves out. And then...
I have one other question. This is for my mom's home. I transplanted the oak hydrangea.
Oh, the oak leaf hydrangea.
Any specific?
Cool.
Yeah, so
those are beautiful.
I like
sounds
those
like you
lot.
Live in a warmer part of the valley here, but oak leaf hydrangea will often bloom quite nicely. You know, there are compact varieties, but usually 5x5, 6x6, wouldn't you say?
Yep.
They usually like it fairly shady. Usually full sun is not the best place for them. Sometimes it gets a little too cold in the winter. You lose some of the top. That means there'll be a lot more wood to prune out.
Mm.
And usually then those ones don't bloom that year. Because of that reason.
Yeah, around here we don't really, at least you know, our site, we don't, unfortunately, that's one of my favorites, but it's not hardy around here. And even if we got it to live, the flower buds would not be, so we'd never get any really good blooms.
Okay.
But I do love that hydrangea.
And I would say that it's worth it just for the leaves, just for the foliage.
It is. It's a cool plant.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, and it is gardening today. We go to Maureen in Fulton County. Maureen.
Yeah, hi. I'm just trying to find out, how do I get rid of Joe Pieweed?
Hmm. Who's he?
Most people are planting that.
I was
going
to say that, too.
A nice big...
No, it's so invasive, though.
So it usually stays in a very large clump, doesn't jump around too much. If it is jumping around...
Maybe it ain't Joe.
Maybe it ain't Joe, exactly. Usually it gets heavy and large, but doesn't... It creeps out from the edge. You won't find it... spreading dramatically out. I'm wondering if you're thinking of milkweed.
It could be. I don't know. A friend gave it to me, and she called it Joe Pieweed, and now I want to get rid of it.
If it is milkweed,
mine's spreading.
Yeah, if it is milkweed and you rip a leaf, you're going to get white sap coming out of it, which don't get in your eyes or anything like that either, because it's not the white sap's not good for your.
And if you want to identify it, you could just send a photo to any of the emails.
But if it is a Joe Pieweed, what you're saying is the easiest thing is to dig it up.
Easy. Yeah. Just dig it up, and you know, actually, people would want it. So
yeah,
you know,
somebody else.
Some of these large weeds very dangerous though?
No. Some of them can be, not Joe Pieweed.
No,
And milkweed is a good plant.
We have
giant hogweed and poison parsnip, both which are very very toxic.
The hogweed is nasty.
Yeah, and the parsnip will burn. They're both related. The hogweed has a white flower. The parsnip has a yellow flower, and it's coming into bloom right now. In fact, it is in bloom, depending on where you are right now. And that's a really bad one. If you don't know what Joe Pieweed, or I should say a giant hogweed, or the poison parsnip looks like, there's tons and tons of pictures online on our Landis Arboretum Facebook. I actually just shared that post today on things to look out for, and those two are right on there. And you can go to Landis, facebook.com/LandisArb for that. But those are very toxic, and people have lost their sight to that.
And getting back to the Joe Pieweed, I mean, that is a perennial that will come back every year, as you know, and it can be part of the garden. It's a very great anchor, a very tall plant. And if it is getting in the way of other plants, that's part of gardening. You would go over there and either remove those sections so you have now room around it for there to be some airflow, or if you don't like it anymore, you dig it up.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. Now we jump over to line six and Karen in Great Barrington.
Hi there. I have a client with a Pachysandra bed filled with poison ivy and bishop's weed.
Oh, boy.
That's what I have said to her. And anyway, is there any way to get rid of it all?
Well, yeah.
Or even just
the bishop's weed, I'm not sure about.
What's bishop's weed?
I think it might be time to just dig a low ornamental ground.
Okay,
yeah,
but
or
it's
just, not poison. Just start to cut, mow down that section for... this season, so that the poison ivy will be pretty easy to eliminate with the mower. The bishop's weed will eventually go away. You'll probably do in most of the Pachysandra, but that will give you sort of a new palette after the end of the season to start again.
You can go in there and dig it all up, or you can kill it all.
Have anyone successfully ever dug up bishop's weed?
Oh, sure.
Well, they all dig it up. Did they ever get it to not come back? That is the question.
You just keep digging.
In that situation where you have three different things and the Pachysandra is supposed to be kind of permanent, it is hard to get all those little pieces of roots out. So the Pachysandra has to come out as well.
Oh.
Yeah, so which is fine. But other than mowing, because that's what I've suggested, is there any other way to get it all?
Smothering. If you put black plastic down or weed fabric of sorts, that would temporarily put it down, not weed fabric long term, but just as a smothering agent, that would of course kill anything underneath it. You left it there for a while, and then you've got a new, you get a new shot at this.
But that's not going to kill the bishop's weed and poison ivy, will it?
If you smother it, it would, sure.
For how long?
Season.
The season would be solid. Yep.
It's a pretty good time to start these things because we have lots of growing weather ahead of us.
Okay.
Yeah, and that definitely will take
the stress.
Yeah.
So start the smothering now, Karen.
Yep.
And so if you wanted to turn it into grass, you just mow it and eventually it'll become grass?
Well, you might have to seed it eventually.
I mow my lawn and it doesn't turn into grass, I'll tell you that.
If you just kept mowing it, it would all be green, but it would not be all grass.
You could also...
Thank you so very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Karen.
You got it.
The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Gary in Scotia. Gary, you're on.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a question. We have in our property a couple Altheas. One that's beautiful. It's huge. It's almost 15 feet tall, 10, 12 feet across, and a couple smaller ones that we have planted. And the large one since we've been here anyway, years, has always been beautiful. Last year, the flowers were gorgeous. It was loaded. This year, nothing. It's dead. It's gone. Yeah. And two of the small ones, there's nothing there. And we have some friends up the road. We're in West Glenville, and they have Altheas, and they, same thing. Nothing came this year. Do you know why that would have happened? Could anything to do with the winter and why?
Yes, it was.
This winter, it wasn't.
So the winter had some extremes in it that were pretty interesting. There was. And several factors. Some of the factors affected the death of a lot of plants. Some of them, it was all the factors. So the two, the relatively mild, this is what everyone seems to be coming up with anyway, the relatively mild December going into January, where we had an immediate extreme freeze. So we went into January. You could tell the lakes weren't frozen yet.
That's
it was
right.
Still pretty mild. And then we, over in the Berkshires, we had minus 17 drop. A few days after that, it was in the 50s again.
Yeah.
And about 10 days later, we had another drop, minus 12 or 15, somewhere in there. Those two events with the frost not being in the ground yet, so the ground wasn't actually frozen. It mm-hmm. went deeply. The plants probably weren't quite shut down because of the mild December, and no snow cover to insulate them in any way is most likely what damaged not only Rose of Sharon, but we see it in a lot of rhododendrons. It's probably what burned a lot of the juniper and arborvitae that you see damaged. The real question is, why did some arborvitae or juniper look great, and 3 feet away, another one looked terrible? That's still a question I have. And then there was some discussion about the soils being extremely saturated as we went into winter and whether that had a factor.
A lot of it, seems to revolve around these rapid temperature fluctuations where we go from really cold to really warm or from really warm to really cold. And a plant cannot adapt its cell structure rapidly enough to account for that. Mm. And you're not alone. Okay. A lot of people had trouble with rosehip.
Yeah. All right. That's what we wondered, because the big one, the 15-foot one, that obviously has been here for years and years and years, and it just seems strange. All of a sudden, boom.
That's the weather.
Not the extreme cold. It's those fluctuations.
Right.
And those are the years when we see the most the most problems. And this one was a little bit different than our normal fluctuations. It had a little bit different sort of pattern, a little bit more odd than what we're kind of normally seeing out there. But the end of the day, we can still say pretty confidently that, winter kill was the problem. For your plants.
So when it gets really hot and then it immediately gets very cold, not a good thing.
No, it really just wants to, in a perfect world, it would slowly get cold, stay cold, and have snow cover.
It's very much like this program. It's nice and warm out, and it's about 12 degrees here in the studio, and Fred is in his parka.
Then I got to go back out into this heat. Imagine the fluctuations my body's going through.
You'll probably get some wilt.
Anything for the radio, man.
I'm sure there's more hilarity to come. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC Gardening Show. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves here to answer your questions. And once again, that number is 800-348-2551. This one came in via email from Ann in New Marlboro, Mass. Subject heading, peony fungus. Peonies suffering from rust-colored fungus that curls the leaves. Been treating them weekly with an organic fungicide and understand that I must start treating them very early next year. Will it hurt the plant if I cut back the foliage after blooming, essentially now, or do I need to keep the foliage and keep treating with the fungicide all summer? And that's from Ann.
Yeah, so usually the fungus in mind is botrytis, and it's usually a black stem. There might be some red in there,
kind
like red spots
sometimes,
first.
Yeah.
And then turns black, and it causes a wilt, so the stem itself will turn black. Often it's not all the stems, so the first thing I would say is pruning out any infected stems is great, but if there are leaves that are still fairly green, even if they're spotty, I tend to say leave them up, because the peony's storing energy for next year, and you want it to be able to do that.
I agree.
Air
circulation. There's no advantage to cutting it back.
No, because it wants that. It needs that energy back in the bulb. So taking it all, which is the worst of the two evils.
Is right. You have to apply a fungicide before you see the fungus.
Yeah. Right. So taking out that foliage, the bad foliage, so that you have better air circulation. If you have other plants nearby that are sort of crowding it, if it's not in the sunniest location and you can consider moving it to a more airy, sunny location, all of those would be helpful. And then, as Bob said, the fungicide as a preventative.
The fungicide, then, she shouldn't bother?
For the most part, it's getting too late for that.
I would say probably not going to get you're not going to gain the return on investment. Not be very.
But will it hurt the plant?
Good. No, it shouldn't hurt the plant. Right. It might just be waste of time.
And generally, I would just say it's not something you should have to do. So it's something cultural in the garden that you should be able to solve.
And of course, it was a bad year for that.
And this is a really bad year. Yep. And if you do again that kind of material, you're cutting back. You'd like to compost that kind of material. So, that kind of stuff is, better to put in a garbage bag or a burn pile.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward here on The Gardening Show. Mickey is in Albany. Mickey.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am troubled by holes, tennis ball-sized burrows in my lawn. I don't know what they are. I haven't seen anything. And I don't want to kill, poison, or trap them. And I also have dogs that use the yard, and I can't put down any kind of poison. Do you have any help for me?
Are you finding these like mounds of soil? Like mounds?
No, that's just it. I don't see any mounds. I just see the holes.
I would say tennis ball size makes me think chipmunk.
Chipmunks do not leave any dirt.
Chipmunks.
I don't know what they do with it, but they take the dirt away.
Ah.
So I wouldn't worry about it. If you're not going to poison them, you're not going to trap them. I don't know what you're
doing. And they're not really causing any damage except for a few holes. It doesn't sound like it's a bad thing. It could be a vole. Yeah, but it does sound like the hole's a little bit too large for our common vault.
It's really even. That's even big for a
chipmunk. It's even big for a chipmunk.
It's a little big, I think, but I can't think of,
anything else.
It's too small for a woodchuck,
and
it's too big for a vole.
Okay.
Yep, that's it. I'd agree
with
that.
And I don't see any molehills. I don't see any dirt around.
It's not a mole. Yeah, so not a mole. You'd see those little mounds of soil.
Yeah.
For sure. They make messy holes, those guys.
You do see chipmunks in your yard?
Oh, sure. I have chipmunks and squirrels galore.
Sure.
Yeah, chipmunks.
We're gonna think that's definitely a chipmunk hole, probably.
Okay.
So there's nothing. So just leave them be.
Yeah, unless you want to get rid of them, there's ways to do that.
And be careful when you're walking around in your yard.
Right.
You want to step in the hole.
Yeah, that's it. There were other things I have to be careful of in the yard.
Yeah. Well, with all those dogs, I get your message, Mickey. Okay. Thanks for the call very much. And now we go to Mary in Clarksburg. Mary.
Yay! I am so glad you guys are on today. I love this program, and I love this radio station.
Thank you.
So here's my quick question. A couple of years ago, I planted a Ruby Falls redbud tree in my front yard, and it had two summers of being absolutely gorgeous. And last summer, I did notice that the leaves came out kind of late, like towards the end of June, beginning of July. We thought it was dead. Well, this year, I'm seeing some leaves coming out of the bottom of the tree, and that's it. Yeah. Should I keep crossing my fingers, or is it kind of gone? What do you think?
No, yeah, it's too late now.
Yep, that one's a goner.
That's another winter kill that we were talking about before.
Yeah, boy, it's a gorgeous tree.
It's really always been on the edge, even without the winter we just described. It was probably bound to happen.
Yep,
red buds are a little iffy.
You might be able to train one of the sprouts from the base up to a new tree. Most likely, it would not be that exact cultivar.
Is it the same color? Is it the foliage? Uh-huh. The foliage is that red color?
Yeah, but it's time to move on, huh? Yeah. But boy, I wish I lived a little bit south of here because it is, for anybody out there who lives south of here, it is a gorgeous tree. Yeah.
Well, the fellas say there might be hope. If the
little sprouts you had mentioned coming up from the base, if that looks like the same leaves that were on.
They do look like the same leaves.
So then what I would do is I would. I don't know how many sprouts you have, but let's say, do you know how many sprouts you have coming? Or?
Hold on one second.
A bunch of them?
Look out the window.
All right.
More than one. Hold on.
Okay.
There are two good sizes.
Two. Okay. Yeah, that's good because
if
there's like four or five, I would say you reduce them to two. And the reason, ultimately, you're going to reduce it to one. But when I've done that in the past from experience, sometimes something happens to that one. so leave two for a little while, and then maybe you make, next year a decision. Okay, one of them, this one looks a little better. But you very well could get a brand new tree out of that. And if that's the case, it's already got a fairly large root system. So that little sprout could get quite big, quite fast. In a few years, you might have a sizable tree there.
Yeah, so
certainly worth the shot, especially if it's the same color.
Leave them till next summer.
Should I cut it back to a foot?
I think I would let it all grow, and I think that
you can take the dead away.
Oh yeah, the dead material that can go now. Just be careful not to hurt the sprouts when you take the dead away.
All right,
it's easy to have that tree fall one way or the other and then break a sprout.
Mary, thanks for the call. And now we go to Amy in Glenmont. Hello, Amy.
Hi. I have a question about my grass. I noticed the other day when I went out back, I have a lawn that it's exposed a lot to the sun and it's surrounded by trees. And there's these areas of dark, almost like a steely blue, dark steely blue with a powdery area on the top two-thirds of the grass stems. And then when I touch it, it's like charcoal on my hands and it doesn't wash off easy. Hmm. I'm assuming it's some sort of mildew.
Yeah, it sounds like it might be a powdery mildew. It gets on bluegrass, particularly when there's a little bit of shade or a lot of dampness. It'll probably go away as the weather changes. You could apply a fungicide.
Okay.
Sometimes these things are related to pH. You might want to get that checked. Some fungus diseases are because the pH is too high or too low. Nitrogen is either too much or too little. But in general, that'll often go away as the weather becomes less damp.
Which is about to happen.
Okay. Now, we started doing that true green thing for the first time this year. Is it something they could have been – could they have changed the pH?
No, probably not. My guess is it's just weather related. It's a fungus.
Okay.
Yep.
And we've had so much rain, and then the temperatures have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Amy. Our number here, 800-348-2551. Tim is in Ballston Spa. Tim, you're on.
Yes, a couple quick things. I've made 60 to 80 jars of tomato sauce every year for many years. Last year, the chipmunks just about wiped me out.
Yep.
No answer required. Yeah. And I think you may have already answered the question I initially called about. I have a red cedar that's been growing in the corner of our pool area for probably 20 years. Beautiful, beautiful tree. And this year, it died from you know, about 5 feet from the ground up. And everything else is great. So is that probably the temperature change, or could it be a modest use of weed killer around my pool area?
Well, I definitely saw, I definitely saw a lot of damage on red cedar, you know, Juniper virginiana specifically from this winter. But Fred's going to say it's a girly group.
Well, I was going to say, it could be a number of other factors in there for sure.
I've seen a lot of bulls.
I've used weed killer in moderation for 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, you're not getting it on a stem or anything, right, of the tree?
No.
It does, I don't think it's that.
Away from it.
It could have some underlying root issues, which is possible. Yeah. But the top, you said it's a top-down decline? Or
bottom-up.
Bottom-up decline.
From about 5 feet or 4 feet up. Dead.
4 feet up is
down
dead.
On the bottom.
It's
looks
alive.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. So there could be an underlying root issue that took years to show itself, combined with the winter stresses.
Probably several things going on.
Probably a few things going on in there. That sounds pretty severe, but you said you've seen quite a bit of that red cedar.
Which I was really surprised at, because it seemed that most native plants, of which this is.
Yeah, because that one doesn't normally.
Got through the winter pretty well. We didn't see a lot of damage.
Not bad.
But I did see several.
But when it's up the top, that's often the snow insulated it down at the bottom, which may have prevented it from happening.
And I have Joe Pye weed that I have just been loving forever.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, so the cedar, will the cedar come back?
I think he's not going to lose what's green.
Yeah.
The top. Juniper never refoliates from old wood once it's dead.
Some pruning.
So you could prune out the dead.
You got nothing to lose.
Actually, he's got an opportunity here. Yeah. I think he can make that into an interesting.
I'm going to cut it off.
Yeah.
And bend some up.
Yep. Exactly.
And see what happens.
And sometimes you get some of the most unique specimens I've seen have been the result of.
Going to have a topiary.
Sort of, we had to do something with it. We didn't want to lose it. And wow, look what it did after 3 or 4 years. So. I like to think of that as an opportunity, like you said, Greg. That's a good way to look at it.
Over to Nicole in Ballston Spa. Nicole, you're on.
Hi, I'm a new gardener, and I have a north-facing side of my house that I would like to plant some fresh flowers for, like, cutting for vases. Do you have any suggestions for that?
Is it sunny?
It is sunny. We have a red maple that's probably 5 to 10 years old that is, you know, growing taller, but it's not hitting that side yet.
The reason, because you said the north side of your house, and that would typically shade a garden up against the house. So that's why we're just asking if it's going to get 4 or 5 hours of sun every day.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yep. And great. It is sandy there.
Yep. So you have a complete palette choice. Everything you would see that you like would probably grow there for the most part. In terms of...
Oh, dear, that's a lot of options.
Yeah, annuals and perennials, you know, herbaceous perennials and annuals are probably the general categories of choice for cutting flowers. So in annuals, it's things like, you know, zinnias and cleome and cosmos. And then in perennials, it's very broad. It can be, you know, right now a stilbee is coming into color a little later on. We get a lot of the sort of daisy form things, a cone flower, the black-eyed Susans. There's a tremendous choice. So I think you should just start to look around, see what you like.
Yep. You may want to consider, since you said it was really sandy, adding some organic compost type products to help enrich the moisture or the moisture holding capacity of that soil.
How often would you have to do that if it's sandy soil?
You know, if you're, I'd like to say every year you could add a little bit of compost or a little bit of organics. It's a good thing once a year, to sort of a good general rule, and especially sandy sites. You know, different if we're planting trees in heavy soils, and that's not the same as amending those types of backfill. That could be creating problems. But sandy soils, and you're talking about herbaceous material, gardens.
You got to mix something in it. You know, it's basically sterile.
You're not going to have. Yeah, you're going to be fighting it, and your flowers are going to be easier to grow, and you're going to have better results with the organics on an annual basis.
All right, over to Mark in Pleasant Valley. Mark, you're on.
Oh, thank you for finally taking my call. A few years ago, I was very enthusiastic about gardening, and I built a fence. I had all kinds of stuff growing. I planted some cherry trees. I planted some grapes. But since then, I've become very busy with my sourdough bread business, which leaves no time to garden.
Right.
So I have mowed it, but not really done too much with it, and I don't know when I'd be able to get back to it, but I would like to eventually get back to it. So what's the best way to, you know, kill off the weeds, keep everything preserved so that I can pick it up with the least problem?
I think in just a year what you're saying is mowing, really.
Yep. You know, generally, you know, leaving the soil bare is never, for a long period of time, is never a good recommendation. So I really think, you know, mm-hmm. let the vegetation grow, and when you are ready to start to move towards, let's say the year before, or even the year before, you want to really start this again, smothering all of that is the best way to go. You don't have to dig it up or till it all up. You could use black plastic. You could use that black heavy duty weed fabric material, and you're just going to smother it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, leave it on for a couple of months before you're ready to plant. And all that organic, you'd cut it before you smother it, but all the grass or whatever weeds were growing there, once you smother it, that becomes literally, you know, great organics, and all that rots away, and it feeds your new crop.
Right. And I have just two quick suggestions. One is any of those really substantial specimens that you like, you go, wow, I planted, you know, that viburnum over there or some large clump of baptisia, you could just mow around those.
Yep. Yeah.
And they'll, you know, these tougher things, mm-hmm. these things that are still existing without you really taking care of them, will probably continue to survive.
Sure.
And then you can just remake the garden from that lawn area when you're ready. Or you could hire a gardener and just get it all done.
There you go. Now. All right, we have 30 seconds. Now, Bob, or I should say Scott in Schoharie has been waiting a long time. Scott, you have 30 seconds.
Thanks, Ray. Calling, I've got a plum tree, Fellenberg variety, that has experienced June drop the last 2 years, but over the course of the summer, I lost every plum, and just looks like we're kind of on the same course this year, and curious what you'd tell me. Thank you.
In 15 seconds.
So they're dropping? So it's, you know, that the plums are
falling off
green.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It sounds fungal and probably a preventative type thing if you want to keep that from happening. These last 2 years have been really, really wet, and you know, seen a lot of this across the board and a lot of different plant species.
There's two ways to deal with fruit trees as a homeowner. You do nothing and you get a crop when the weather works out and everything's perfect, or you do a lot of preventative controls, which include both fungicides and insecticides, lots of organic ones out there, and you do it sort of as a regular program starting in April until the fruit is ripe.
Well, we are done here, gentlemen. Thank you for being here. Support comes from the Green River Festival, featuring Lucinda Williams, Angelique Kidjo, the Wood Brothers, and more, plus local food, beer, crafts, and kids' activities July 12th through 14th in Greenfield, Massachusetts, greenriverfestival.com. Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, where campus is a 14,000-acre lakeside wilderness offering career-based education since 1946, paulsmiths.edu. At Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts, Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs, edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Thanks again to Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Amber Sickles took the calls. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we dig into some gelato with Donna Delmiano and Rocco DeFazio. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.